I immediately went there and saw Captain Preston at the head of 6 or 8 soldiers with guns breast high and bayonets fixed. Then instantly I saw a piece of snow or ice fall among the soldiers, on which the soldier at the officer's right hand stepped back and discharged his gun. At the space of some second, the soldier at his left fired next, and the other ones after the other. After the first gun was fired, I heard the word, "Fire." Who said it? I know not. Turning myself to the left, I saw one man dead. Distance, about 6 feet. I, having a stick in my hand, made a stroke at the soldier who fired and struck the gun out of his hand. I then made a stroke at the officer. My right foot slipped. This brought me on my knee, the blow falling short. I saw the soldier that fired the first gun endeavoring to push me through with his bayonet, on which I threw my stick at his head. The soldier starting back gave me an opportunity to jump from him into exchange lane, or I must have been inevitably run through my body. I looked back and saw 3 persons laying on the ground, and perceiving a soldier stepping round the corner as I thought to shoot me, I ran down exchange lane, and following Mr. Gridley with several other persons, with the body of Captain Morton's apprentice up to the prison house, and saw he had a ball shot through his breast. At my return, I found that the officers and soldiers were gone. Richard Palms at the trial of Captain Thomas Preston, October 1770. And welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast. Episode 7, The Boston Massacre. We talked last week about the Townshend and Quartering Acts. Though not the most famous of acts, they would be the first real step to war. Had Parliament not repealed the Townshend Acts, in my earnest opinion, we would be starting our war by the summer of 1770. Because on March 5th, 1770, the same day that we said Parliament repealed most of the Townshend Acts, 5 colonists will lay dead in front of the old State House in Boston. Now, we call it the old State House now, but I tend to think that when the Boston Massacre happened, it was just known as the State House. So, you know, forgive the minor historical oversight. I'm just calling it what we know it as today. What we know as the Boston Massacre is actually preempted by the murder of Christopher Sider. Named by Samuel Adams as the first martyr to American liberty, on the night of February 22nd, 1770, a group of schoolboys will accost a sorely loyalist merchant named Ebenezer Richardson. Richardson was not only a loyalist merchant, but also a customs official, so he was a servant of the crown. Well, these group of young schoolboys, having grown up in the age of the patriots, will take it upon themselves to show their support for the patriot cause and give this loyalist dog 1-4, and they'll start yelling things at Richardson, and maybe they started throwing things. But Richardson will go into his house, he'll fetch his musket, he'll climb to the second store window and begin firing indiscriminately into the crowd below. Young Christopher Sider was shot twice and dies. Richardson will be dragged from his home and jailed. Sider's body will be brought to Faneuil Hall. He was honored by a funeral procession of over 5,000 Bostonians 4 days later. Inscribed on his casket were the words, "Innocence itself is not safe." Richardson, on the other hand, was found not guilty. After his trial, he was, well, caught up with by the patriots, and then he was tortured. In my personal opinion, I will assume that there was some tarring and feathering going on because, well, that is the most creative way to torture a loyalist in the city of Boston at the time. But no matter what, the murder of Christopher Sider will push Boston to the absolute edge. And it would almost be thrown completely over the edge because barely 2 weeks later, the shots rang out on the night of March 5th, and five colonists will lay dead. That night, a British sentry outside the Old State House became embroiled in an argument with a local. As a crowd gathered, Captain Thomas Preston will come to the aid of the sentry. Now, the crowd got even more angry at the sight of more redcoats, so they begin to throw things. And one soldier will slip on ice, fall, and in the fall discharge his weapon. The others will follow suit and fire their weapons into the crowd. And at the end, five will lay dead and six are wounded. The first to fall was a runaway slave by the name of Crispus Attucks. Now, those who paid attention in elementary school, and this, yes, will be on the quiz later, should remember the name Crispus Attucks. He was born to a slave father and Native American mother in 1723. He would run away from home when he was 27, around 1750. When he gets to Boston, he changes his name to Michael Johnson. From there, he goes to have a long and illustrious career, winning 6 gold medals and setting all kinds of records in the 400-meter dash. And, oh, wait, my bad, wrong Michael Johnson. Bad. Bad Wikipedia. Actually, all joking aside, he'll become a seaman and rope maker. But on that night, he'll become just another martyr to the cause of American liberty. Now, the first volley will, I'm sure, scatter some of the crowd. But, like what happens when you step on a hornet's nest, you may squish a couple, but you just angered the nest. So Lieutenant Governor Thomas Hutchinson will restore the calm, and Captain Preston and his men were jailed. They will then be put on trial for murder. Now, Captain Preston was tried separately from his men, but their legal counsel nonetheless could not be better. Two young, upstanding lawyers in Boston will come to the aid of these British soldiers, realizing, or at least hoping, that if they could spare these men from the noose, maybe, just maybe, it could spare a civil war. Those two lawyers were Josiah Quincy and John Adams. Preston's trial will take place in October from the 24th to the 30th. Adams gains a victory. He's able to secure acquittals for Preston and his men. Two will still have to face the charge of manslaughter, but it was a minor offense compared to murder. One person I can guarantee was none too pleased was Samuel Adams, the cousin of John Adams. Our favorite firebrand orator, I'm sure, had all kinds of choice words for his cousin, and it probably made Thanksgiving all kinds of awkward for them. But nonetheless, no matter what John Adams thought he was trying to do, the British government's reputation was already damaged. A young silversmith named Paul Revere will create an etching depicting the massacre. It will show British redcoats firing indiscriminately into a crowd of men, women, and children. The victims of this redcoat firing squad are fleeing the scene, throwing their hands up, begging for mercy, pleading with their attackers to cease the madness. And in the foreground, along with the dead bodies, stands a puppy. This is something that's always very interesting. When looking at political cartoons, I always look at them as an objective historian. But if a normal person was to look at this 1,000 years in the future, they would look upon this bit of American history and say, What madness happened that these men in red coats would fire at the innocents in this crowd? But there's something interesting about that, friends, because many of the accounts came from adult, middle-aged men. There were very few children in the crowd, and I highly doubt there were a heck of a lot of women. No, the crowd that probably stepped face-to-face with Captain Preston was a group of patriots, middle-aged men, dock workers, seamen, merchants, whoever, and they began to have words with the British soldiers, and they were looking to tussle. But that's not what we concern ourselves with. See, the etching is what we concern ourselves with, and it shows the patriot point of view. It shows men, women, pleading with their attackers to cease fire. And you can only imagine and hope that after they fired their volley that they moved on. But there's always that little bit of bravery that any artist will put into a political cartoon or political picture or photo or whatever to show you that there is a way to stand up. And for that is our little Scottish Terrier puppy that we see in the front of this etching. See, as the people flee, the puppy stands there barking at the British redcoats. Now, friends, I can tell you with some degree of certainty that there probably wasn't a puppy there at the time. But Paul Revere puts it in, and he does it for a reason. He is really tearing at the heartstrings of his viewers to look at these people. They're being gunned down, but this little puppy is willing to stand up. And if we're any bit as brave as that little puppy, then we can stand up to the British. Now, every piece of art is up to its own interpretation. I mean, if you look at any Jackson Pollock, I can ask 10 different people and I'll get 10 different explanations of what is actually happening in that painting. So just like me, I have my own explanation. I'm going to put a picture of the etching up on the Facebook, and I want other people's opinions of what the etching shows them. What do they see when they look at it? The etching circulates the colonies, and, well, redcoats basically became public enemy number one, especially in the city of Boston. After the massacre, Preston's going to retire. He leaves Massachusetts, and he heads back to the UK. There, he kind of falls out of history. See, not entirely sure what happens to the man, but some of my sources tell me that he ended up in Wales, or some others say he ended up in Ireland. But either way, he lived out his days looking back on that night and just wondering how it all went wrong. Those that were killed, well, they're given a place of honor. They're buried in the Granary Burying Ground in Boston. Now, as I told you guys last week, I actually just came back from Boston, and we went to that burying ground, and though a new marker marks the spot, the five men plus young Christopher Sider are laid to rest in a, what I assume is either they're laid out in a line together or they're laid out on top of each other, and they're marked by a single headstone. In that burying ground, we also see major heroes of the American Revolution. Samuel Adams has a marker there. Paul Revere and John Hancock, just to name a few. So as I plan to expand the Facebook page, I want to add more pictures in, including the pictures from the burying ground, And if I got a really good shot of the Boston Massacre marker, I think I have one in there, but if I can look through my pictures, if I have a better one, I'm putting that in. So I know I said when I was doing my recommendation last week that I wasn't going to do a media one, but I just thought, well, you know, I really should just do this one last one, and that will be, I promise, will be the last media recommendation for a while. And so I've chosen the John Adams docudrama from HBO. This is by far one of my favorite historical dramatizations that I have ever seen. I mean, it is just so well done. Paul Giamatti is grade A phenomenal. I mean, he just does a fantastic job. The reason I chose this is, one, it actually gives a pretty nice depiction of the Boston Massacre. You don't see those in documentaries or in movies or anything really. And it also does a depiction of the court trial of Preston and his men. Now, we are all good historians, and we all know that Preston was tried separately from his men, but in the John Adams docudrama, they're tried together. You know what? We'll forgive them. It's not a big deal. But if you have not seen it, I strongly, strongly urge you see it. The other reason why I chose it is because I think it's a really good lead-in to next week's episode. And I'm going to step back from the story, and I'm going to do our first character episode. Character episode is where we're just going to take the time out, and when I talk about something important, I want to talk about the person involved. And since half of this episode was devoted to the Captain Preston court trial, I felt it was important that we talked about John Adams. So till next week, this is the American Revolution Podcast, and as always, keep your powder dry.